I'm here in the centre of Talla on a beautiful early spring day with the sun shining down on top of us. Jack Quinn from Raccool.
Yes, Morris, that's right.
Now, Jack, I'm going to go back and, you know, trace a little bit of your history.
Okay.
And talk about Raccool. But you were born in 1942.
In Raccool, yes.
In Raccool.
Yep.
And tell me about the Quinns first. Were they your father, your grandfather? Can you trace back?
We've gone back as far as my great-grandfather. My father was born in the village. My grandfather was born in the village. And from what we can gather without doing too much research into it, my great-grandmother on my father's side came from Baltinglass, I think. On my mother's side, we haven't gone back that far, but I know both my grandparents on my mother's side were also born in the village.
And what was your mother's maiden name?
My mother's maiden name was Timmins. One of her brothers was an overseer on the county council for a long number of years on the roads maintenance section of Dublin County Council, the pre-runner to South Dublin County Council. My father started working as a very young man in Swiftbrook Paper Mills in Saggart. And about 1950-51, he changed jobs. He moved to work in Killeen Paper Mills down at Fox and Geese. I have five brothers and two sisters. Mm-hmm. My eldest brother, Jim, died here a couple of years ago, and he'd been living in London for a number of years. But the rest of us all live. I have a sister living in Spain, and I have a sister also living in Perth in Australia. But the rest of the family live quite local.
And you're a home bird yourself.
I'm a home bird myself. Yeah. Never got the urge for to venture anywhere. No.
Tell me about the paper mills, because I'm sure your father brought home many stories about the working away in the mills there.
Yeah, one of the longest things that I can remember with my father was him actually coming home from work with his lunch unopened, where work would have been that heavy and they'd been that busy at the time that they wouldn't even had time to stop to eat their lunch. And it was quite a novelty. This would be back in the late 40s. At that stage, it would be a novelty for us to eat his bread and jam for our lunch after he'd come home from work. It just goes to show how much times have changed. Like nowadays, things like that just wouldn't be allowed to happen with health and safety regulations. But I can remember quite vividly, as a very young child, Dad coming home with his lunch wrapped in the newspaper that Mum, Lord of Mercy, on both of them, would have given him. And at a later date then he moved to work in Killeen Paper Mills down at Fox and Geese.
But talk to me first about the Swiftwood, isn't it?
Swiftbrook.
Swiftbrook, yeah. Paper Mills. They were situated where exactly?
In Saggart.
In Saggart.
Yeah.
And it closed down or your father just left?
No, they were still in operation at the time that Dad left. They closed subsequently, I think, in the very early 60s. Swiftbrook Paper Mills closed as a working mill.
Mm. And you know, when you think of the papers and the kind of work that was involved there at the time, what were they producing paper for? Was it newspapers or
no? They produced very high quality paper. If you remember in years ago, the paper in ledgers would have been Azure Laid and Swiftbrook Belvedere Bond and all very, very high class stationery paper. They also made paper for banknotes and postal orders and things like that that couldn't be made in any of the other mills in the country.
And did it have a watermark?
Everything that Swiftbrook made had a Swiftbrook watermark on it, yes. I don't know whether there's probably some of it still available in the museums. Swiftbrook is still trading as Swiftbrook. It's part of the Clondalkin Group. They import all their paper now. As you're aware, there is no paper manufacturing in this country at all now.
That's right, yeah.
The energy costs proved to be prohibitive.
Mm. You never got into the factory yourself?
I never worked in Swiftbrook. I worked in both Killeen. I started serving my time as an apprentice electrician in Killeen in 1958. And I didn't last too long, because one of the reasons being that I had to go to tech 3 evenings a week in Capel Street, or in Bolton Street, and it just proved to be out of the question. And I also worked in Clondalkin Paper Mills for a number of years until it closed in 1982.
Now, before we get to that, go back to your school days. Mm-hmm. and Ratcool. You went to the local school there?
I went to the local national school, yeah. I went to school until... I finished national school in 1956 at the age of almost 14, having done my primary cert and various things like that.
And who was your teacher?
My teacher was a man, Kerry man, Sean McGillicuddy. He was originally the principal in Britis. And when the principal that we had in Rathcoole, Mr. O'Byrne, left, Mr. McGillicuddy was promoted to, it would have been considered a promotion from a small school in Britis to a larger school in Rathcoole. At that stage, it was a three-teacher school. There was Mr. McGillicuddy, Mrs. Dowdle, who was a native from the parish. She lived in Kingswood. And there was a Mrs. Gallagher, who commuted from the city.
Was it an old building?
It is, yeah. The building is still there. It's now, it's just been re-roofed by the scouts for to use as a scout's den. And when the new school was built in Rathcoole, I don't know exactly when it was done. It would have been the late 60s, maybe into the early 70s. At that stage, the school, the old school, which was a two-room school, was vacated, and the pipe band had the use of it for a number of years for practicing, and then it was handed over to the scouts for to conduct their affairs in.
What? Just talk to me about Rathcoole in the early days, in the 40s, growing up there. What kind of a place was it?
A very, very run down, I suppose you could say. There was, I can remember, practically, I suppose the best way you could describe them was mud cabins on the main street. Now, they've all long since gone. With the development that has taken place, some of the development that has taken place in Rathcoole was good, and some of it was very, very bad. Where there used to be a single-storey bungalow, there's now a four-storey block of apartments, and I don't think things like that are good for what was at that stage a very small village. But Rathcoole, when we were growing up, was the main road from Dublin to Cork, and traffic was that light. We used to play football on the main road. Britis is it's another village that's still in the parish of Sargert. At that stage, there was Sargert, Rathcoole, Britis, and Newcastle were in the parish of Sargert. And in the 70s, Newcastle was taken away from the parish because it was becoming so big and was created into a parish of its own. But there was a school in each of the villages, all of them, like the school in Rathcoole. I think there was, at the time that I was going to school, there probably would have been between 60 and 70 pupils in total in the school, from 6 years of age up to 14, when at that stage people traditionally left school at 14 years of age.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at the changes that now have taken place, the way that things were in those days, did you travel out much from the village? You know, did your parents take you anywhere?
Yes. As an annual treat, we went to when my father, Lord of Mercy, and my mum, we would go to the seaside during his annual vacation, or else we'd go to the zoo. which was a treat. But other than that, we didn't travel out. There was a cinema in Clondalkin in the Tower, and as a treat, when, but not when we were very small, but when we'd be 10, 12, 13 years of age, that kind of age, we used to be allowed to go to the cinema on a Sunday in Clondalkin, which was, that was definitely a treat.
Yeah. And what about transport, going in?
There was only buses. There were very, very few cars in the village at that stage. I can't really remember anyone of my neighbours who would have had a car. Everything was done on the bus. Well, at that time, it took about 40 minutes to get into the city on the bus, whereas now it takes an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And that's progress.
talk to me about the shopkeepers and the businesses in Raccoon.
There was one, two, three. I can always remember four pubs. There was Carroll's, which is now the Putchin Still. There was the Ratcool Inn, which is still known as the Ratcool Inn. There was Fiennes's, which is now the Bonafé House. And the Cozy Bar, which is now Muldowney's. They were always there. There was a butcher's at that in the very early stage. There was only the one butcher's, which was Hayden's. It was located quite close to the what is now Muldowney's. In latter years, there was a second butcher's opened up in Cruces, up near the green, up towards the Putchin Still. And there was Stewart's. I think there was Purcell's, which is also up at the green, at the south end of the village. And Stewart's were the only two shops that I can remember in the village in those very early days.
And, you know, you spoke about the place being run down, but was it a bustling place? Was there, you know, was it an interesting place to grow up in?
It was, yeah. Nobody had anything. The same as in most rural villages at that time. The vast majority of the population around the village at that time worked in the paper mills in Saggart. There was a quarry up just up the road from where we're sitting at the moment, up in Talla. The Selby quarries, and there were quite a number of people locally worked in the quarries, and the rest of them were employed in the agricultural industry. Taft's, the racing stables, always provided a lot of employment locally, as did most of the farmers, because at that stage farming was very labour intensive, as was the job in Taft's. We spent many interesting days down around Taft Stables looking at the horses, Mr. Watt included.
It was an interesting place, was it?
Yeah, we found it. Nobody had anything, so you didn't begrudge anyone anything, because they had nothing to be begrudging them of. You know, we always had enough to eat, enough to keep us warm, and enough. I think we were quite happy with our lot in those days.
What about entertainment?
There wasn't any. At that stage that I'm speaking of, there was no entertainment. In the, it probably would have been in the very early 70s. What is now a cul-de-sac in what's Tay Lane, there was a portable picture house. It was a wooden structure built, and there was pictures three or four nights a week in it. At a subsequent date, the place that's now the Glebe, the same people who had the portable cinema were amusement people called McCormack Brothers. They bought the Glebe and they built a cinema in the Glebe.
Have you a memory of going to the portable?
Oh, I have, yeah.
What I mean, when you say portable, was it there for a certain amount?
It was probably there for probably 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
And then when they bought the Glebe, they transferred the cinema into they renovated it, what was the stables, and put seating into it, and it was the bee's knees at that stage.
But originally it was just like a shed, was it? Or
it was only stables, yeah. Stables. Yeah, yeah. They took the floor out and they put a rake on the floor. They put a slope on it, mm-hmm. so that the people at the back wouldn't be sitting down behind people in front of them.
My goodness. But what's very interesting is the cinema that you spoke about just prior to that one. You know, can you describe it, the way it looked, you know?
It was just a big wooden structure.
Was it a wooden structure?
Oh, yeah, completely wooden. I can't remember what the roof... The roof was probably galvanized at one stage. I can't remember exactly what the roof was. But the four walls of the cinema was wood. And there was wooden shuttering on the floor. And it was just benches. Something like we're sitting on at the moment, with no backs on them. They were just forums that you sat on in, and it probably held probably about 100 people. But it used to be packed.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what kind of films? Have you any idea what was showing?
Oh, I can't remember. I can't remember the type of
film. Were they black and white?
Oh, it was all black and white. I don't know whether there was even colour at that stage or not. But I've always found that life was good. My whole background is working class, and I would consider that I've had a good life. I'm 65 years of age now, just retired last October, and I'm enjoying my retirement, but I've worked all my life.
Yes, and you worked your life inside in a paper factory, is that
right? No.
Or did you move around?
I moved around a bit. Yeah. I've had various different...
Well, start at the beginning of your working life then.
I started...
You were kind of following your father's footsteps, were you?
Well, I started off working in Killeen Paper Mills as an apprentice. And then when I left that, I went to work in Rathcoole Products. It was a mushroom farm. It's now Green Oak Industrial Estate. I worked at shop fitting after that for a while. Then I went to work in Clondalkin Paper Mills. When Clondalkin Paper Mills closed, I was unemployed for about a year, during which time I drove the ambulance in the daycare centre in Rathcoole, which was definitely an experience. The elderly people that I was driving at that stage, I have known them since I was a child. And it was still Mrs. This and Mrs. That and Mr. The Other. There was no such thing as Jack and John and Mary. And even at that stage, which would have been the 80s, the people who I had known as children, I was still referred to them as Mr. Riley or Mrs. Kennedy or what have you. There was very little familiarity involved in it. I only did that for about a year. I then went to work for... Beamish and Crawford in their warehouse in John F. Kennedy Industrial Estate. And
what was that like?
That was different. I was in the warehouse most of the time, but during the peak times during the summer and at Christmas and Easter, I would be out helping on the trucks. I was there for I think about 8 years, and I then moved on to the job that I retired from, which was driving I've driven forklifts in a lot of the jobs where I was employed, either driving a forklift or truck or van driving, something like that, most of the time. But I've had an interesting life, without any regrets, thank God.
Well, go back to the brewery now, because I'm sure that that must have been pretty good.
It was only a warehouse.
Warehousing. And
Beamish and Crawford were a Cork brewer. They brewed Beamish Stout, and at that stage they had the franchise for Carlsberg, and it was brewed in Cork and brought up on trucks, 40-foot articulated trailers, into the depot in Dublin.
Was this the 80s now?
That would have been in the 80s, yeah.
So it was no longer the train, it was now trucks.
Oh, it was trucks that was brought up on at that stage, yeah, and big 40-foot articulated trucks. And it was distributed then from the depot in JFK Industrial Estate. That was interesting. I got to see a lot of Leinster when I'd be out driving or helping on the trucks, delivering to the pubs from Jack White's Cross down near Arklow, up as far as Omeath, up at the border, and out probably Kildare Town would have been as far out and that direction, then Navan and Kells and places like that. It was interesting. Met loads of different people.
And finally, your other job inside in the
Irish
back
paper
again
sacks.
Yes.
Yeah. I was driving a forklift in the real stores.
Yeah. Now, you know, in those days, because you were driving a forklift around about the end of the middle of the 80s, was it, or the end of the 80s? Or?
Well, in when I was in Clondalkin and Paper Mills, I was in the warehouse driving a forklift. When I went to Beamish and Crawford, I was driving a forklift, and I finished up driving a forklift in Irish Paper Sacks.
I spoke to a man whose name was Reggie Goodbody, who was managing director of Leg Box Factory, wooden box factory, and they used to make crates, and they were the first people here in this country to make crates, not crates, but yeah, crates that would be lifted by forklift. Did you come across any of those?
No. In Irish paper sacks was exactly what it says on the label. We made paper sacks for the milk powder industry and for animal feed. On occasion, if things were slack, they might do potato sacks. But in latter years, they've been specialising in bags for the milk powder industry and animal feed. And they would come off the machine and be palletized and be shrink wrapped and just loaded onto trailers and go out.
Yeah, well, these pallets now I'm talking about. No,
the pallets would have been made in latter years. They were made by a company out near Black Church, Max Pallets. They did most of the pallets for Irish paper sacks, but they were custom made pallets. They were a specific size for different jobs.
Was there? There were many characters, I'm sure, living in Rathcoole, and people, I suppose, that would stand out, you know, in the street more than anybody, and also people, you know, distinguished people, we'll call them. Are you familiar with those?
I would remember some of the people who would have been regarded as characters. Back in the I'm just looking here at a photograph of the Rathcoole Pipe Band. I can remember as a child going to watch them practicing during the summer evenings. There was an uncle of mine, Jim Coffey, who was an army man, used to do marching and discipline with them. He'd take them out, at this stage they didn't have any uniforms. And he'd take them out and they'd walk up and down the street for when they'd be doing parades and things like that. Uncle Jim, as we called him, when he died in 1958, was the longest serving NCO in the Irish Army.
Was he?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. It was funny. Uncle Jim married a sister of my mother's. And when Aunt Nan died, several years later, Uncle Jim married my father's sister, so he's my uncle on both sides of the family.
Well, that's quite unusual, isn't it?
It is quite unusual. Maybe it's not for a small village like Rathcoole was at the time. I'm just looking at the first edition of A Pictorial History of Rathcoole, which was issued by the Daycare Centre. And it really is very interesting. There's photographs of Rathcoole down through the years in it. Some very good ones of the pipe band and various gatherings of local people. Swiftbrook Paper Mills is featured quite prominently in it. We could find them now.
I suppose the older folk then in Rathcoole, you would have in the daycare centre, you would have spoken to them, would you?
I would. One of my favourite people of all times would have been Catty Dunn. Catty is featured quite prominently in local folklore. She was a Shanachie, for to say the least. Herself and Mary McNally, whom everybody knows, would have been very good friends. Catty was an avid reader, one of the best read people that I would probably have ever known. And she was an absolutely fantastic, beautiful person. Unfortunately, she took an awful lot of her knowledge to the grave with her, because someone like you, Morris, didn't have the time or the get up and go or whatever, for to sit down with a tape recorder and record her longest memories and experiences and things like that. Cathy was well into her 90s when she died. I can remember when I was a very small child, her mother, Granny Dunn, used to churn. And we'd be passing by and we'd say, Granny Dunn, I hope you're not churning another babby for my mammy. there were various other characters living in the village at the time. One of my uncles, Kit Timmins, was, as I said earlier, worked on the council for a number of years and the maintenance. There was another man, everyone that ever set foot in Rathcoole would have known the Blue. The Blue was Johnny Keogh. He lived on the Green, and his address on most of his correspondence was the Blue, the Green, Rathcoole, and everyone knew who the Blue, the Green, and Rathcoole was. But the people at that stage, they had a totally different outlook on life. Maybe we were more laid back or what, I don't know. But at that stage in Rathcoole, practically everyone was related to somebody else, or their sister or brother was married. We were all...
You were all connected. But
we're
here in the centre of Talla, and, you know, the building that's going on, you can hear all the noises in the background, you know, the sawing and the lifting, the huge machinery that's there now, and the incredible changes that are taking place. But for many, many years, for most of your lifetime, time stood still out there. You know,
to a large degree, it did, Morris. Yes, I can remember as someone 13 or 14 years of age, if somebody was ill in the house, we couldn't go to the chemist, because there wasn't one in the village. If somebody was ill and a prescription was needed after the doctor paid a visit, most of the time I would wind up going on my father's bike to Clondalkin, which was about between four and five miles away. Very often on the old Nace Road and during the winter. Like, people say how they were the good old times. They weren't really. If you told people nowadays that you knew someone who lived in a village in the 50s that didn't have a chemist, they'd laugh at you.
Yeah.
They really would.
Yeah, but I suppose there were other things that came in your time. The radio.
Yeah, I can always remember there being a radio in the house. We used to stand around the radio listening to football matches, and I can remember in 1947. Listening to a match from New York on the radio. That would probably be one of my longest memories of listening to the radio. But there were various programs at that stage. What they were at this point in time, I can't remember. But we used to listen to them religiously on an ongoing basis. But as I say, at this stage now, I can't remember any of them offhand.
Were there any other characters in the village?
There was a man called Bob Earls that lived in Sagart. Bob was a character well known to everyone as well. And there was the people who worked on the road, sweeping the roads. There was a Tom Dowdle that lived on up the hill in Rathcoole. He did his job with the assistance of a horse and cart. They used to go around in the gullies on the side of the road and things like that to keep them clear, and with the result that there was very seldom any floods. Most of the time the gullies worked, and there were various people that at the moment they just won't come to mind.
But, you know, was there more time for people, you know, stopping and talking and chatting?
Yes, there probably was. Everyone would, well, at that stage, everyone would know everyone in the village, as it is now. Since I would know a quarter of the people living in the village.
And there's people say, I don't know half of them, and I don't want to know the other half.
Did the road names or the lanes and the place, did they change much?
Not really, no.
Same names?
No, there's Tay Lane and Finders Lane. The proper address of it would have been Stony Lane, but we always call it Finders Lane. Where I live in Rathcoole is West Park, officially, but no one calls us anything other than the Ranch.
How did it get that name?
I have absolutely no idea. No idea. There was a man, Mick Connolly, and like the blue, the green. Mick Connolly was Mick the Ranch Rathcoole. And everyone knew these, that Mick was pipe master in the pipe band for a number of years, right up until the band ceased to exist, which was one of the sad things that disappeared from the village. But it's like everything else. People just, the younger people coming along just didn't seem to have the interest in it. But the band marching on a Sunday afternoon, going to the All-Ireland Pipe Band Championships, or coming back from them, or going to a football match, where it was an event. Everyone would be out watching them. Or if there was something taking place in the village, like Mr. Watt winning the Grand National, the band would be out for to parade him or whatever to the
all the
village.
Special occasions.
All the special occasions, the pipe band would be out for them religiously, hail, rain or snow.
And talking about religion, was there, you know, did you have the marches, you know, during
May Day,
Corpus Christi?
No, we had no, at that stage we had no church in Rathcoole. The parish church was in Saugerd, but we would walk to May Day processions and things like that over in the parish church in Saugerd.
And were people very religious?
They would have been at that stage, yes. It would be unheard of for someone not to go to Mass on a Sunday and holy days. Speaking of which, I remember in the 8th of December, 1955, the village in Rathcoole, talking about the gullies being cleaned, but we had a deluge overnight, and there was 4 foot of water in the main street in Rathcoole on the morning of the 8th of December. And that
what
would,
year?
1955. Yeah. That would have been one of the few times at that stage that I would remember that I wasn't able to go to Mass. Even at that stage, we had to walk to Mass in Saugerd. I used to go to Mass religiously with an aunt and an uncle, Jack Timmins and his wife Lily. We'd walk to 8 o'clock Mass in Saugerd on a Sunday morning.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. But people were religious. If you saw the parish priest, you would certainly salute him. They were held in a higher regard at that stage than they probably are now. We have a marvellous PP in Saugerd, Rathcoole, at the moment, Father Kieran, Dr. Kieran O'Carroll, marvellous character. But you call him Father Kieran or Father Michael or whatever the case might be. Yeah. At that stage, back when I was growing up, it was just Father, and you didn't genuflect them, but you almost did. They were held in very, very high regard, as was the minister from the Church of Ireland. I can remember Mr. O'Shea. He lived, his residence was in the Glebe, which was just badly burnt with a fire here a couple of weeks ago. Which is sad. It's another one of the listed buildings in the village that will probably have to be pulled down because of the fire.
Now, talk to me about that building. Where exactly is it situated?
It's situated in the middle of the main street in Rathcoole.
And there since when?
1780, I think.
And what went on there?
It was originally built as an orphanage.
For who?
Mary Mercer, it was called the Mary Mercer Orphanage, as far as I can remember. I don't know who the children would have been that would have been in the orphanage. That was for
That was what it was originally built for. And subsequently, there was another old school, another old building in the village. That was a girls' school. And they switched. The girls' school moved...
to the glebe.
No, the... Sorry. Originally, it was the presbytery for the Protestant church. It's right beside the presbytery.
This is the other building.
This is the other building I'm talking about. It's the daycare centre now, where the local dispensary. They changed. The priest or the minister, the Church of Ireland minister, went to live in the glebe, and the school was transferred up to what was the presbytery at that time, up beside the church, because the glebe building was bigger.
When did that happen?
I don't know. That would have been well before my time. But I can remember Mr. O'Shea, a very, very old gentleman with a trilby, living in the village. That's the place now where the cinema subsequently was bought. The McCormacks bought the building and used it for a storage yard and for the cinema.
All these buildings had, you know, so much went on in them in different times.
Different times. Yeah. There was, yeah.
It's a shame to see the glebe burnt, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it is. It's one of the few buildings that's left. For different reasons, buildings are taken down and replaced by what we're looking at now that I don't consider as architecture. They're just square boxes.
we'll walk on down this way.
It is sad for to see our heritage going. Like, we have to leave something for our children and our grandchildren. And the way we're going at the moment, there won't be anything left for them. I can remember Talla, a village the same as Rathcoole. And Talla has, believe it or not, the village of Talla is pretty much as it always was. It hasn't changed that much. Whereas Rathcoole has changed to an awful extent.
Right, yes.
With apartments being built and houses and what have you.
When we look at Talla today, you say it hasn't changed
the
much.
The village itself. I'm talking about now down the main street in the village of Talla. It hasn't really changed that much. All right. The faces of some of the business premises might have changed a little bit. But there's an awful lot of the old buildings still in the village in Talla, which sadly we don't have in Rathcoole.
Yeah.
Sadly we don't have them. There was an old RIC barracks.
Yeah.
There was an old RIC barracks that was taken down by the council for to build the barrack court. And the building that took place, and it was very, very tastefully done. It's one of the better developments that took place in the village. But it was another piece of our history that's now gone. There's a listed building at the near end of Rathcoole, as you come in off the dual carriageway coming from the city, Rathcoole House, where Mary McNally's family, not her immediate family, but uncles of hers, would have lived. And thankfully, it's been in a very, very run-down condition for a vast number of years. But now a developer has bought it, and he's going to restore it to its former glory and use it as his corporate headquarters, which I think is absolutely fantastic. It's one of the old buildings that hopefully will be there for my grandchildren and maybe even my great-grandchildren, which I think is marvellous.
And, you know, when you look back over the years that you've spent there, and, you know, you've commuted in and out and you've worked in different places, what is the place, I'd say, that you have a great fondness for and you wouldn't leave it?
No. At this stage, I could never see myself being taken out of Rathcoole unless in a box. No, it's home. It's always been home. I've never had a desire for to emigrate or anything like that.
I married a girl from Newcastle, which was part of the parish at the time. We were married in 1966. I have two sons and two grandsons. Both of them married, and we're very close. As I'm still very, very close with my brothers that are still living in the village, and I have absolutely no desire to call home anywhere else.
Well, Jack Quinn, it was a pleasure talking to you today, and thank you for telling me your story.
You're more than welcome, Maurice. Thank you very much for listening to me.